Just when you thought it might not be pullover, it pullo happens again. I'll work on my puns. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Is that the best you can do? Really?
Yes, actually. Hi, everybody. I'm Dre Harrison. Welcome to episode 594 of Motorsport 101. Glad you can join us again. We'll ignore the fact I said 594 in the MotoGP episode. Once again, I miscounted. Just like old times again. That's me. Shut up. Do not clap that. Do not tolerate such insolence around here. Well, they are clapping. Riverside will inevitably cancel out that extra noise. So, suck it. Yes, it is almost 600 episodes in the book. We've got to figure out doing something for that as well. That's going to be wild. Good luck to us.
Are we now at the point where every 100 episodes is now like every birthday after the age of 21?
Yeah, it's like when you turn 22, it's the first birthday where it's like, oh, now you're just old until you get to 30. There's nothing special here.
No, 30 is when the knees take away your bending for good.
You're 27. What the fuck are you talking about?
mine came early. My knees stopped bending at about 24.
Classic male story. A guy who came before he was ready. Let's talk about IndyCar at Road America.
I just want all of you to know that thanks to internet-related issues, we all had to wait an extra 3 days to record this just for Andre Harrison to assault your ears with this nonsense.
Yes, right. I made it well worth the wait.
And guess who had the internet issues this time? It's not Dre Harrison,
me.
Who famously had the worst internet imaginable for some of the early years of the podcast. It was not Cam Buckley, who's I don't know which
like mascot I want to stuff through a desk fan more. Michelin over the MotoGP news that didn't end up on our podcast. Thanks, guys. Whoops. Thanks for announcing that after we recorded. Or Comcast.
Comcast is a mascot.
If they do, I want to push them through a desk fan.
Comcast hasn't really got a mascot, so to represent Comcast and their company Sky, we're going to stuff David Croft through a paper shredder. You know what? Take that back. I don't mind Crofty. Ted Kravitz. There we go.
I think that's something we can all agree on.
There we go. Problem solved. But yeah, we're going to talk about IndyCar at Road America again. As RJ quite rightly alluded to, apologies. This is going to be a little bit later than we actually planned. There was a combination of internet issues, Riverside not really working at its optimum, and just scheduling in general. Sorry, these things happen. I hope it's worth the wait, despite having to, you know, have to wait an extra couple of days. How bad? But hopefully this makes up for it. As Alex Palou, he reminded everybody just whose season this really is with his sixth win of the year, 6 in 9 races.
Nice.
I'm surrounded by children on this recording. I still, again, I love that the chat has gone up with the stats of Chevrolet have still not won an IndyCar race this season as an engine supplier, which is just crazy.
The only two entities that have won have been Alex Palou and Kyle Kirkwood.
Yeah, like, honestly, at this point, Chevrolet have somehow hit the less likely scenario of winning 0 races this year than even fluking their way into one. It's ridiculous. This is IndyCar. Like, this is the series where you often consider that having 8 different winners in a year is a down year. We've had 2 different winners through 9 rounds for the first time since 1980, and we're over halfway through the season. How did we get to this point? This season is dumb and it doesn't make sense. And we're going to try and make sense of it all somehow anyway. Joined as ever by Cameron Buckley and RJ O'Connor, but you probably already knew that if you're listening to this and you're 5 minutes in already. So, yes, enjoy that. We'll be talking about Palou winning, the fact that, well, you almost had a different Chip Ganassi win. Scott Dixon from the back via fuel saving. Stop us if you've heard this one before. It's a familiar tale if you've been watching IndyCar for the last 25 years. All of that. More cautions that you can shake a stick at. We have 5 of them Road America over the course of this race. Beef between Carl Kirkwood and Will Power. What is it with Will Power and causing beef at Road America? He must really love the bratwurst. IndyCar's getting a brand new car, sort of. And we have to pay our respects and say goodbye, and I would say pour out a cold one, but it would be a waste of a perfectly good cold one, to IndyCar's favorite B2B marketing event. The Thermal Club is dead.
You know the real tragedy of this?
What's that?
Because of the delays, we don't get the immediateness of that news dropping just before we're about to record the episode.
Can I just say, the Pack Watch cigar just hit my hand like Mjolnir.
Okay, troll others.
Did you have to put the hashtag ad as you caught the cigar in your hand?
In pissy rest.
SpawnCon, sponsored content, etc. Basically, you can find us in the meantime real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're also now putting some of our YouTube shorts on there as well. Tune in now and subscribe if you want to hear me talk about Alex Marquez for nearly 3 minutes. It's a fun time for all involved, unless you're Simon Patterson. We're also on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on twitter.com/motorsport101. I am wilding today. Recording at midnight.
I say Motorsport 101 after dark is usually something only reserved for endurance racing in our Discord server. Instead, you're getting to hear it on the show. This is just another day that ends in Y for most of us.
Listen, just be grateful that I have not decided to start joking about heroin yet. That's not for another 2 hours at least.
Yeah, I gotta get my boss in for that.
Yeah, yes. Sadly, I'm not Martin Haven. For better and for much, much worse. Other places you can find us are on Blue Sky, at Dre Harrison, at RJ O'Connell, and it's CBuckley917. There'll be Scarlet Social for that. You can check us on Instagram, Motorsport101pod. You can get follow us on TikTok, TikTok.com/M101_podcast. You can follow us on there. Our website, Motorsport101.com, if you want to catch up on all things written by yours truly. There's full reviews of MotoGP and Mugello, as well as IndyCar's Thermal Club. And Ask Dre will also be out in the next half week or so as well. All of that, and check it out. Check that out on Motorsport101.com. And if you're really lucky, so you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content, and there's the occasional $1 shit I give away as well, sometimes when I'm feeling generous. That's a thing. You can also upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're going out, as Ghost Raptor is doing right now, despite the fact it's 6 p.m. in his time zone, somewhere in Louisiana. Attaboy. You're a dedicated mother trucker. Also, if you want to back us for a whole year, you can do so with a 30% discount. Isn't that generous?
That's
you get
right.
12 months for the price of 9.
That's
isn't
right.
that nice?
You get all this racing season, and you get the off season for free. Because yes, there is still off season left in motorsport in 2025.
Yes, that is a thing. You are paying all that extra off season, which is just mostly delicious Formula E related content. Anyway, after this quick musical interlude, we'll talk about IndyCar's Grand Prix at Road America.
You mean he won in Indonesia? Never.
Yeah. Formula E content, delicious in the same way that made Gordon Ramsay go, look at the color of the chicken with his teeth gnashed together.
But before we talk about the Expel 200 Road America itself, Dre, Louis Foster got his first IndyCar pole position. And I love how this happens, right? He shaves down from like mostly stubble down to like a mustache, and he immediately looks 5 years younger. Then he shaves the mustache off this weekend, gets his first pole position, and looks younger still. When it's time for RLL to go run at a permanent road course, they turn into prime 1986 Bobby Rahal, right?
It's wild as well, because it also, like, it was shaved off by Will Buxton for charity. Dario Franchitti donated $1,000 out of his own back pocket to shave that bitch off. Love me some Dario. I've always loved Dario, and thank God he shaved off that he looked like an 80s porn star with that mustache. It was dreadful. I'm so glad it's gone.
He looked like a Gen Z fuckboy. To finish my point, when it's permanent road courses, RLO becomes like prime Bobby Ray Hall. When it's anything else, particularly short ovals, they turn into 1993 Bobby Ray Hall at the Indianapolis 500. And we all know how that went.
Please, no true sports.
This was the Ray Hall Hogan at this point. Ugh. I know it was a warmed over true sports, but still.
Just put it back in the microwave. It wasn't good when you made it fresh.
Anyway.
Chef Mike, baby. Chef Mike.
Yeah. Foster's first pole position, though, was marred by absolute classic IndyCar early race chaos. We had three early cautions in the first 10 laps, leading to alternative strategies. First, David Malukas hit the back of Christian Lundgaard early on and spun himself out. Robert Schwartzman spun out to the outside wall on lap four. Stingray Rob misjudged Marcus Armstrong's breakpoint and crashed first in the wall and then in the tires at turn four. It led to two distinct strategies. It's Scott Dixon going from the back of the field into an ambitious 17-lap final stint fuel save with outs below, behind him only needing to make 15 laps. With two to go, Dixon conceded for a splash and dash because we can't have all the miracles of the world, leaving outs below to hold off the hard-charging Felix Rosenquist for his sixth win of the season in nine races to tie the mark last set by Anthony Joseph Foyt II in 1975. Pelot's 17th win of his career, and extends his championship lead back out to 93 points. And also, Santino Ferrucci got his second IndyCar podium and drank beer after the race because Lil Bro thinks he's stone cold.
Yeah. Look, even I have to admit, I laughed. I'm guilty.
Someone had to.
Shoot me down with a lightning bolt. I thought it was funny. Okay? Look, don't shoot the messenger here. Like, I'd be lying to you if I said there wasn't something inherently quite cool about finishing an IndyCar race, immediately running out of fuel, running to the catch fence, and then sculling a beer a fan has thrown over the fence.
Yeah,
I would love to do that.
If it was any other driver that, like, IndyCar media and social media was not trying to manufacture consent that he is a fan favorite and somebody that is actually likable, we would all be applauding this.
Oh, it would be the new intro to the podcast. Just playing the old SmackDown theme music. Like, just play Just Bring It while we're having Will Power skull a beer at the middle of Road America and then give it a double bird suit like he did that time in Milwaukee. That would be perfect. You've seen it on Botchamania.
It's New Hampshire.
Why not?
It's New Hampshire. You are not erasing the heritage of the 2011 New Hampshire shit show.
Anyway. I wasn't an IndyCar watcher back then. Forgive me.
But the only thing more erased right now is that Port-a-John.
If you know, you know.
You know, there's a piece of me that really wishes when I was younger that we actually did go to that race. But we didn't because it was raining. And then the race went ahead, even though it was raining. And that caused every big meme moment from that race.
It's incredible.
Worth noting as well with Santino Ferrucci. That is four top fives in a row for a Foyt car in one season. The last time that happened was Kenny Brack in 98.
It's been a hot minute. Door. This is literally unprecedented in the 21st century.
Santino Ferrucci is eighth in points right now. Eighth. He's somehow doing better than last year. I don't like this.
It doesn't have
500 wasn't even that good by comparison.
It was okay.
David, it's going to be David. Let's talk about Alex Blow. Dre, you said it on the race review. This might be the best of his 17 wins so far.
This was not, like, the first half of this race was genuinely a rough one for Alex Palou in the sense of he was a bit fuming. He didn't get a particularly good initial launch off the line. He tried tucking in behind Foster. That was the wrong move. It made him vulnerable going into turn one. He was shuffled down the order to fourth. He was roughed up. I think this was the race where it's a bit like when Tom Sykes and Walter Buck used to dominate at Donington. It was like, okay, we've had enough of Tom Sykes winning round here. We're going to rough his ass up. And that's what happened. He, like half a dozen dudes passed him in the first two laps. Part of that was because Pelot was running the primary tyre, which was not the quickest tyre at the start of a stint, in all fairness. But He was roughed up. He had a tough start. He had to run an alternate fuel strategy to make this work. It wasn't going to plan for Palou until it very suddenly did in the middle portion of this race, where he's carving through the Penske's. He's beaten Power and Kirkwood. He passed Christian Lundgaard magically off camera. And I still, to this day, 5 days later, do not know how he did it. It's never been shown on camera how Palou magically got ahead of Christian Lundgaard and then became the leading group on the alternate strategy. But it miraculously happened. Don't know how. I joked that Alex Palou is a dark magician from Yu-Gi-Oh! Because he pulled another magic trick out of his hat on that one. Got to the front of the queue. And then, basically, look, I'll put it to you this way. Scott Dixon, in a fuel-save scenario, is pretty much the version of IndyCar Sephiroth.
Yeah.
Playing one-winged angel.
Roll the tape back to the first caution when it's Dave Malukas going off in the gravel. Scott Dixon is one of a handful of cars that comes down a pit lane, and James said, remember this pit stop.
Yep.
Inge's been here. He's seen this shit too many times.
He got to live through this for a good decade.
Yeah, like this is a man who knows the score. And like I said, as soon as it happened, he was like, yep, I'm going to remember this. This is how Dixon gets back. And for those who don't know, Dixon was going to make round two in qualifying, but he was disqualified for impeding Devlin DeFrancesco, lost his two best times, and had to start from basically the back of the grid in 25th place. But he was right at the back because he came in on lap two to basically run an alternate strategy. As we said in the script at the start of this segment, the final stop came down to him doing a 17-lap stint or trying to do a 17-lap stint in order to try and win the race. Now, a full tank and you're blazing it at Road America is 14 in a 55-lap race. So generally speaking, it's just barely a three-stop race. Dixon had to go 17 to try and win this race. Now, the math, especially given Road America is a 1 minute 50 lap time round there at full chat, it never really looked on that Dixon was going to save that fuel. But because it's Scott Dixon, because we've seen him pull this off so many times, in the back of your head, you're still thinking, surely he can't, right? Right?
Yeah. It's your subconscious going, well, of course he can't make it, but maybe. We've been here for too long. We've seen it too many times. But for two laps at the very end, it looked like it could have actually worked out for him.
As said, Dixon was two laps short. And look, it's a testament to Palou. Palou was within a second of him the entire final stint of that race. He basically bullied Dixon into not being able to fuel save as fully effectively. You can't win in that scenario if you give up track position. So Dixon is having to navigate, keeping Palou behind him and not giving him an opportunity to pass, while also trying to be able to fuel save three whole extra laps of fuel at Road America. In shocking news, Dixon can only manage one of those three laps.
Yeah. Palou did not allow him to pull off his preferred strategy.
I see what you did there. That was devilish of you, sir. But you said pal off. It was almost like you were trying to do that on purpose. It was actually quite funny. Mm-hmm. Even if it was seemingly an accident, you sicko. But because Dixon's so good, you just had that half belief that he could still pull this off somehow, and he couldn't. And Palou, give him credit, he still had enough pace where he was able to bully Dixon into not being able to run to the flag, still run that 15th lap himself, and hold off Felix Rosenqvist, who set off the fastest lap of the race on the final lap, trying to gun him down. It was a second quicker on his final. It was only a 2.1 second win over the line. Rosenqvist, who was on a different strategy entirely, or he could push for the whole 14 lap final stint. He was on a fresh set of sticker reds, running qualifying laps, trying to chase him down. And Palou never looked like he was going to lose. The only reason there was any doubt was because it was Dixon on a fuel safe. And we all know that is about as invincible a weapon as you get in IndyCar, until it wasn't.
Until it's adopted by Alex Palou himself. Because he's, who are you? I'm you, but better. That is really what this came down to. And as you mentioned, this is a race that Palou had to kind of, he had to actually go and win this one. He got roughed up early and he had to make his race in the middle stint. And once again, through fuel saving, through the excellence of his pit crew and Barry Wanzer's team being just the best in the business.
Barry Wanzer versus Mike Hull in a strategy face-off. That's a duel for the ages right there. Those two are some very smart, very, very smart people.
Barry's so good, man. And again, it is so good to have him back because he was in hell a couple years ago. And
looks well.
IndyCar is a better place with him here. Unless you're, of course, trying to compete against him, because he and Alex are rewriting the rules of what is possible. In case there was any doubt, in case anyone thought that this championship was back on after David Malukas pile drove him into a wall and he had a mediocre day on a short oval, which turned into eighth, like it always does. Mm-hmm. No, there is no championship fight here.
Not even
a little.
No, you needed probably two more of what we got at Detroit, where, you know, and look, Palou finishing eighth would be completely fine in most scenarios, but unfortunately, the way the luck shook out over there in Gateway, it was arguably the two worst men he could have faced that were first and second, Kyle Kirkwood and Pato O'Ward, the two direct people behind him in the championship fight, and oh, still up by 93.
Well, how did that work out for those two this weekend?
Well, Kirkwood recovered to a reasonable fourth place in the end. It's a good. It's still not a bad point stay for Kirkwood. He was in the wars. We'll get to that in a minute.
That exactly is the problem.
Yeah,
it could have been more.
The thing is, the one this really hits is Pato, because Pato was 17th. He's 115 back now, I think. Pato's in big trouble in terms of any chance of a title fight.
It's weird to say that he is like he's one of the only title contenders left, and yet he has had a really off season.
Well, that's the thing. It's off, but it's also like not bad at the same time, because it's like he hasn't won a race this season, but he's had like a slew of sneaky top fives where he's just
qualifying
like,
has been horrendous this year.
He's given himself so much work. It's like every other week, Pato's got to do some funky strategy to try and get back into contention. And in McLaren's credit, they've been very good from the wall this side of the season. This is one of the few times that they had to do something funky and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
It's very odd. But Pato took a big blow in his title aspirations off the back of this. Christian Lingard did as well, because he spun out after being pushed off at the back straight on that corner there. Kirkwood was able to reasonably recover into fourth place in the end. We'll talk about Kirkwood in a minute, but I mean, like you guys have said, what more can you say about Palou that just hasn't already been said in the last year and a half? That was just breaking out the extra quality when no one else can in this field like that. That was the second half of that race was as good as I've seen Alex Palou drive a car in IndyCar. And he won
the Indy 500 this year.
He's had some miraculous performances already in his IndyCar career. And let's not forget, this is still only year six of him in IndyCar, period.
Does not feel real.
You have better odds of Alex Palou finishing top five in an IndyCar race than you do on a coin landing on heads or tails.
Yeah, he is 50 of 90.
He is 50 of 90 in top five finishes in his career.
That is ridiculous.
That includes when he was driving for Team Go / Coin.
Yeah, he was a coin driver in his first season. If you take out that year at coin, so if you just say, since Alex Palou joined Chip Ganassi Racing, he is 49 out of 76 for top five finishes.
I like those odds.
That is outrageous. 49 out of 76.
It's like watching an NBA finals in the last 20 years. Like, was LeBron in this finals? Yeah, probably.
It's almost two thirds. It is 64.5% since joining Chip Ganassi. 2 in 3, you're talking that Pelot will finish a Chip Ganassi race in the top five since joining that team in 2021. This is obscene. This is ridiculous.
In the words of our favorite shitposting IndyCar journalist, how do you win a championship against that kind of consistency? You don't. As simple as that.
Yeah. You don't. He's just that good.
Back into a red car, and he channeled the energy of Prime Scott Dixon to now become the most successful Alex in the history of Chip Ganassi Racing. You know your history of American open wheel racing, you think that's impossible. But then again, you said that a lot about Alex Pelot over the years.
This is, and you know what the terrifying thing is? Okay, he's got Iowa in 2 weeks' time. That is a short oval. They'll be playing
We'll see with Ganassi.
We'll see. Pelot did get second place in race two here last year, so he's not like he can't have a good day on an oval obvious reasons.
It wasn't necessarily on speed and merit, though. But that race was funky as hell.
But if you look at the other races around that, Mid-Ohio, he's won at Mid-Ohio before. Toronto, he's won at Toronto before. Laguna Seca, average finish at Laguna Seca in his career, 1.75. In the four attempts he's been to the second, including one win by 30 seconds on that track. Portland, multiple time winner at Portland. Like, these are Pelot tracks that are coming up. He's probably going to win at least one more.
You know, a friend of the show, Ed, actually talked to me about this in a DM a few weeks ago. I say few as in two. On Off Track, they were talking about the stats for best average finish at a track with at least three starts there. Of the top eight, Alex Pelot has five. Four starts at Portland with an average of four. Three starts at Toronto with an average of four. Five starts at Long Beach with an average of 3.4. Five starts at Barber with an average finish of 2.8. And as aforementioned by Dre, four starts at Laguna Seca with an average of 1.75.
Laguna Seca might as well be Mark Marquez at Austin. I mean, come on now.
No, we can't say that anymore.
Ugh, God.
Well, Mark Marquez at the Saxon Ring, though. Ooh.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There you go. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, we are running out of superlatives to describe what this man is doing in IndyCar right now. It is absolutely outrageous. And now he's winning with us. Now he's winning with a fucking solo cup on the side of his car. It's just stupid.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think it's fantastic. I like how athlete of the year on this podcast is certainly going to be two halves of the same that damn Spaniard coin.
Yeah, it's going to be pick which damn Spaniard between Mark Marquez and Alex Pelot at this rate, and good luck separating those two.
Two people having generational seasons.
Yeah, I have fun with that. I mean, we got to review some of the early chaos. We had five cautions in this race, which for Road America and only a 55-lap race is kind of wild.
Oh, Dre, we just backloaded all the cautions from the start of the year, so now they're starting to hit.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's the dirty money. You know all about this, Dre Harrison. I respect it, but it is somebody was going to bring it up.
You bastard. Well played, O'Connell. Well played.
I wish my team could take advantage of deferred money more often, but this is not a baseball podcast.
No, waiter. Please, more one win, more run losses. I'm so sick of these Red Sox. Burn them down.
I refuse to comment. That was a hard hit from Stingray.
It was just missed
his breaking point. It kind of sounded on the radio like he was caught off guard by something Armstrong did. Either he stopped early or what, but
that was uncouth.
That was nasty. Yeah. You forget as well, just like, one, how thin the catch fence is around. So I remember, you might remember this one, but last year there was a Ferrari Challenge, like, gentleman driver race last year at Road America.
Yeah.
And one of those Ferraris went into that catch fence. And it reminded me of that. And it was a nasty one. It took him like a good hour to fix that fence after the Ferrari went into it. You forget how thin that wall is and how, like, it's short. Like, the concrete that's, you know, above it. It's, oh, it was a nasty one to watch in real time. Let me tell you. It's like, just what the fuck is Stingray Rob doing grinding against the outside wall like he's playing Tony Hawk's Pro Skater? it's a wild one. I mean, I can't tell you with a straight face whether Marcus Armstrong was breaking early or not. Even if he was a little bit, I think Stingray might have just overcompensated, which is just unfortunate. But as Raptor in our chat rightly points out, you probably shouldn't be getting caught out by shit like that in your third season. Stingray Rob is still doing Stingray Rob type things, and this is his third season in the series now.
Stingray Rob, you know, derogatory.
He's just sort of. Yeah, he's the fourth lowest scorer of the full timers in the series right now, behind Devlin, Callum Ilott, and I really like Jacob Abel, but this is getting real bad for Jacob.
Yeah,
he has Dale Coyne points through nine rounds.
Dale Coyne ain't good, and he's making him look even worse, if we're being honest with ourselves.
David Malukas, I reiterate the point. This could have been you, David. This drinking the beer after the race could have been you.
Yeah, I just...
The
problem
David
is that, like,
said
in
turn
a,
one, lap one.
And then, no, to his credit, turn two, lap one.
Oh, now, yeah.
We got to give him the first corner. It's fine.
Technically, the count turns one and two, as two separate corners. So technically, it's turn three.
Oh, shut up. Honestly.
Oh, boy. Oh, we're at Pocono and we're on turn fucking 73.
You fucking narc! Et cetera. No, it's... The thing about this is that I call this the Jonas Volga of breakthrough seasons, where in a vacuum, David Malukas would be probably getting praise for being 12th in the standings right now in a Dale Coyne. The problem is Santino Ferrucci is 9th. And 10 points ahead of him, and he's getting all the big flashy results now. Because as Cam alluded to, fourth straight top five finish, and it's the second one that's been a podium. Like, it's annoying now. It's getting to a point where we just have to say Santino Ferrucci's just good at IndyCar now. It burns me to admit it, but if he ends up finishing top 10 in a foot for 2 years in a row, one of them without Michael Cannon, I can't talk shit about that.
he's been best Penske for like 2 months now.
I don't like it.
Yeah, what?
It makes me feel icky.
Do you want to talk about the Penske nonsense or no?
Yes, we do. We have time for that much nonsense? It feels like we might have to compress it.
Will Power and Kyle Kirkwood basically did. Cam, you remember a little battle on the track between Robbie Gordon and Kevin Harvick at Sonoma? 2000.
Oh, how could I forget?
So it was Harvick's rookie year. He's about to get lapped. He's lapped, and like, he's trying to find to keep his way back in the lead lap. And Robbie Gordon is racing him so hard to try and keep him behind him that he lets Tony Stewart scoop by for the lead and eventually the race win.
Yeah. Robbie Gobby, Rorden Gordon, the legend.
I kind of got that feeling when Kirkwood and Power were battling each other so hard. This is the vengeance for Detroit. This is the revenge arc that they both just let Alex Palou slip by, and Kirkwood lets the league slip further out.
Oh, nice beef on track. I simply do not have these problems. Yoink. look, Alex Palou, great drive. They're making it easy on him.
Seeing Palou get to the front of that second group was like watching Moses part the Red Sea and then the Ten Commandments.
Except the sea is parting itself.
No stick being hammered into the ground, apparently. This is just no. Will Power and Kyle Kirkwood being silly bitches. Like, because that's what this was. Like, look, we get it. IndyCar doesn't have track limits. They think they're above that sort of thing, and there is a little bit of grass on the outside of that corner on the back straight when you run into it. The problem is there's also a lot of asphalt on that runoff as well, if you know where to place a car. And Will Power ran Kyle Kirkwood off early on in that race. Kirkwood was livid on the radio about it. And of course, after the third restart and we got them on track together again, Kyle Kirkwood retaliates and lets Pillow take the pair of them.
Yeah.
The second time in that race. Kirkwood is a one... Kirkwood's been incredible this season, but you can't do that. That's ludicrously stupid.
That's like, because what Will put on him was an extremely aggressive, but what you would call at the end of the day, like, that was a legitimate overtaking attempt, but it was very, very hard nose. It was right on the edge of what you would consider acceptable in IndyCar. Kirkwood made it a point to drive both of them off the road. He pulled a Max Verstappen.
Yeah, he was. He
did exactly what Max did back in Spain.
Yeah, it was blatant retaliation and just minus.
I'm going to get alongside you. I'm going to hit you off to the point where I'm going to take both of us off the road. Not enough to take them both out of the race, but enough to prove a point. If this were Max, and I like Kyle, I like Kirkwood a lot, we would be calling for that man's head.
Well, that's the thing, though. I noticed a lot of IndyCar people who watched Max Verstappen's bumping and grinding on George Russell in Spain and were literally like, is that it? So they could, like, I think North America, and I don't want to get too stereotypical here, but I feel like North America, especially given a lot of them race in love NASCAR, they just don't care for those sorts of contact-based incidents. They just think Robin is racing and have done with it. And they're not here for any sort of nuance beyond there.
Trust me, this is a better stereotype of North Americans than like us as a country of people who love to see other people get deported.
The bar is somewhere nestling with Kissinger right now, O'Connor.
It's like,
man, you hear he's dead.
It's like hanging, chilling there with Kissinger, OJ,
Margaret Thatcher,
Norm MacDonald laughing at all of them,
Keir Starmer. Anyway,
Robin's racing to a point, but an open wheel car is like eventually you're going to cause an airplane crash doing shit like that.
I don't like it. I don't like the sort of race. I've said it before with Max. I'll say it here as well. I don't like the kind of racing that encourages. It's something that I think should be enforced much stricter when it comes to driving standards, but IndyCar generally has a boys have at it attitude when it comes to this sort of thing. As long as no one was like put in a wall or spun out, there was no way they were going to hand out a penalty for something like that. So
it's just self-penalizing because you just let your main championship rival fly up the road because you decided to enact some beef.
And Kyle Kirkwood's better than that, quite frankly. He doesn't need to be Yes, he is, because he's been fantastic this season. He doesn't need to do dumb shit like that on track. On any level. And he did. And I'm disappointed in him for that, because he doesn't need to be driving an IndyCar like that to get ahead of himself, because he's been brilliant this season. He has been, by a country mile, the second best driver in IndyCar this year. He's playing the Alex Marquez role perfectly. It is... wild that we're even having to have that conversation about Kyle Kirkwood, who's had an exceptional career to this point in North American single-seater racing. And he's finally having that breakthrough season. I've got to pull him up on shitty driving standards. Oh, dear.
The benchmark has changed. You know, it's a good thing there were no other significant accidents within Penske this weekend.
And this is the part where RJ O'Connell turns towards the wall and screams in 3, 2, 1. And there it is.
How compelling. Please face the wall now.
Stamp to 26.
Yes, copy and paste the CU in 26 for Joseph Newgarden. What the fuck was that?
I'm honestly, at this point, I'm stunned that Newgarden even put out an Admit 1 YouTube video for that race weekend. Because what the... None of us
would have blamed you if you posted it. So I was like, guys, I lost the tape. Sorry about that. We all would have understood.
We cooked some bratwurst on it.
Melted cheese.
Footage. Yeah, burn that footage to the ground. I don't know with this man. And look, he was already driving weird in that race. He had a couple of really reckless overtaking attempts where going into turn four, he was running his own teammate, Scott McLaughlin, off the road.
Well, classic. Who did he let by when that happened?
Alex Palou.
Oh, shame.
Again, what are we doing? Other people have these accidents. Joseph Newgarden.
I simply do not have this problem. Times two. Like, he was leading that queue. Joseph Newgarden was genuinely in play to try and win this race.
And he ruined it for himself. He drove overly aggressive, and then he makes a mistake on the final corner, one where it's very easy to go wrong on that corner. That final corner is tighter than you think it is, and if you take one too many liberties, you will either go into the grass or you will spin out. Newgarden chose the spin-out option. He kisses the inside wall, he turns his car into a walking crab, and it's game over for Joseph, who now drops to 17th in the points. He is now 249 points behind Alex Palou. He's being outscored nearly 3-1. This is humiliating for Joseph at this point. Like, we talked about this during Gateway. What can we even say at this point? This is like, at what point is this code red? Because this is horrible.
Simon Pagenaud and Elio Castroneves were both ushered to greener pastures for far less than this.
He is behind Kiffin Simpson in points straight up.
Kiffin Simpson's had a very good season.
Kiffin Simpson's actually been cooking this last month or so. He had another very good day.
Sits in the race today. Good, but man. Do you want Joseph Newgarden to get demoted back down to ECR?
No. And look, he has done more than enough at Team Penske to earn the benefit of the doubt and to be given every chance to try and rectify this.
The speed's still there.
The speed is still there, but this is a man who's had 3 top 10s out of 9 races this season. Not all his fault, in fairness. But
no, when you see stuff like this, it's like... Even before the crash that he had, like, he was just driving messy when he did not need to. When if he drove a cleaner race, he was going to be in that final fight for the podium up with Alex. I don't get it, man.
He's just got to execute. The speed is, again, like,
I could say that about Penske as a whole. Right now, they are executing at the worst level I think I've ever seen them run at.
McLaughlin finishing 12th was mid, and that was just like, yeah, that's actually really good.
McLaughlin was 12th. Power was 14th.
McLaughlin, who led early on, by the way.
McLaughlin, who was, at one point, legitimate leader on track. He ends up 12th.
Oh, and Kyle Moyer just went to McLaren.
Ironically, to manage Nolan Siegel, the driver that McLaughlin took out in Detroit a month ago.
That non-compete clause did not last long.
Oh, I tell you, the bids to try and lure Tim Cindric out of retirement, wreck up those money cannons.
That man's going to be eating good no matter what happens, either the severance package or the new deal he's going to get, or both. Imagine being paid not to come to work. Tim Cindric's living every mediocre white boy's dream right now. Buy that man some Pokemon cards if the extra money, if he could somehow find them in North America.
And it is almost Bobby Bonilla Day, let's not forget.
Of course. Good times. No, Will Power is 7 in points and 189 off the top. McLaughlin is 196 off the top in 8th, and Newgarden is 17th. Man. Look, Penske's got nothing to play for this year. It's over. This season is done for Penske. Yeah.
The 500 was an unmitigated disaster. All three of their cars, like, the short ovals aren't even a haven for them because they have speed and then they just implode.
Well, you got beaten by Carl Kirkwood on a short oval. No disrespect to Carl Kirkwood, but that was his first oval win.
He got beat by almost everyone because Joseph Newgarden got flipped upside down and Scott McLaughlin's car broke.
We'll be right back after this.
Oh, like, damn.
All right.
What is there? Like, we are in genuine Penske could go winless territory.
When was the last time that that happened? That's right. 1999, a year in which they had an old, injured Allenzer Jr. and a rotating cast in the second car because they had no full-time driver. Sadly, one of that rotating cast was actually killed, Gonzalo Rodriguez. It was not good for Penske in 1999.
And that's to say nothing about their car, or their tires, or their engine, all of which they threw out at the end of the year.
Gone.
It is...
No, they bought some Reinhardts, and then it was fine.
It is buck wild that we are talking about an IndyCar season where Penske and McLaren are both winless halfway through the year.
Trey, Penske has not gone winless since before they crossed the party lines back into the arms of the Speedway.
Look, I still think they will win at least two or three before this season.
They fucking better. They're Team Penske. They own the series, Harrison.
Yeah, and look what that unfair advantage is.
They'll at least get one in Iowa. They always win in Iowa. They always win at Iowa. If they don't win in Iowa, that's a cry for help. And like, holy shit, they are bad right now. Like, it's not even that they're slow. It's that their execution is horrific. It's just bizarre. And amazingly, we're talking about Newgarden. He didn't even have the most embarrassing crash of the weekend because Connor Daly's car grew a tail like it was the middle of Dragon Ball. Like,
don't let him see them blood waves.
My man outbroke himself massively into turn four, ends up in the wall, reverses out of it, or gets pulled out of it. And as he's being pulled up out of it by the amazing AMR safety team, he then literally just drives away, snaps the band, and he's going to limp back to the pits with the tow rope still attached to his car. Oh, Connor, what are we doing?
He's just thinking about pulling some more of those virtual Pokemon cards, I guess.
Listen, man, Prismatic is hard to come by. Like, that brother is starving right now. He thought, grow a tail, get some viral highlights. It might get some of the ad revenue out of it. But, like, it is actually wild that that's happened to Connor Daly. He was actually given a 10-second stop and hold for, quote, failing to listen to the instructions of IndyCar, which is just hilarious. I saw that on the box score and I laughed. So, you know, if it makes you feel a little bit better, RJ, at least your man didn't have the most embarrassing crash of the weekend. Right?
I just need a 726. Got some serious business. On last Saturday, it was announced that IndyCar is going to introduce its new car, and they now have a firm date for it, 2028, with a lot of the same partners coming back to produce the new car, which does not have a name yet. It's going to be a Dallara chassis. It's going to be X-Track supplying transmissions. It's going to be PFC supplying brakes. But the big thing here is, obviously, it's a lighter car, which they've needed. It's a new engine formula. Remember when they were going to go to 2.4-liter twin-turbo V6s?
And then they decided not to? Supposed to get 2 years ago?
Yeah, that's now back on the table. We're going to get lighter gearbox.
A new car.
We're going to get
2023 engines. Cool.
Is that good?
It's an evolution.
The supercapacitor was an evolution, and we all know how well that went down, like a lead balloon. Look, I get it. I'm glad we can finally pencil in a day for a new car.
Yeah.
The fact it's 2.5 years away does not spark joy.
The fact that the engines that we were supposed to get 2 years ago, which is currently doing quite well in the back of the Acura ARX06, over in IMSA, because that is literally just the IndyCar engine that got scrapped. It's more than nothing, but it's not a whole lot of anything until it's actually put to four.
Yeah.
And we've been here before.
It's hard to get excited about anything that's 2.5 years away like this. It's already the worst case scenario because there was a lot of people that were still holding on to the hope that it might be 2027, and it's not. It's 28. And the engines we talked about before already about being a part of Acura and their LMDH program, this isn't what you call exciting news. It should be. The idea of a new car should excite people.
Yeah.
But it's not here because it's second verse, same as the first, is the general sentiment I'm getting at here.
I don't mind that a lot of this is evolutionary. Like, I don't think IndyCar was actually going to fall through, but some people's idea would just be like, why not just have an open engine formula and just let balance of performance dictate things?
Yeah, considering how that's going over in IMSA and WEC right now. Yikes. And if you're gonna do an open engine formula, look, everyone's just gonna go to turbo V8s.
Yeah.
That's just what everyone would go to. That's
what everyone's doing right now.
Well, that's what we had at the height of this sport's power back in the late 90s, early 2000s over in kart, where we had teams pushing 1030 horsepower as the propaganda number because it was really more like 1100 plus.
Yeah, those cars were awesome.
And those cars were amazing. Were
only 250 cubic centimeters bigger than the ones that'll be in these cars that we're getting in 2028.
The frustration is not like we don't know what the car is going to end up looking like other than the fact that it's lighter and it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have the aero screen integrated. You would think, you would hope that it would be able to pivot to something a little bit more modern with the hybrid system.
Yeah.
Maybe a battery-based system, maybe something more akin to what LMDH is running over in the States with the single supplier Bosch setup. But it's just hard for me to get excited about the engine formula when this is what we were already going to do, and then the hybrid system was such a disaster that it had to be tabled.
Yeah.
The engine's already running quite successfully, tire pressures aside, 2 years ago, in a car that you can already see in the U.S., a car that you'll actually be able to see run at Indianapolis in a couple months' time.
I'll be there.
Hey,
I'm thinking about it.
Gonna give you some brighter news, everybody. I'm gonna give you some brighter news. The Thermal Club is dead.
Oh, let's go.
Yep. The promoter of the track said it himself. We're not gonna have IndyCar back for a race in 2026. I mean, this could have been actually kind of cool. But they announced that Thermal Club was going to have a made-for-television exhibition race with a $1 million prize. It's just like, I could get excited about this. Sure, I could get behind that.
Stray rolling a cigar off-camera right now.
No, I've got out my special Marc Marquez limited edition Lotus watch because it's time for a pack. I'm smoking that Thermal pack.
And you know what?
Right now.
And
right now, it's dead.
Because
I'm going to get a red Solo cup in honor of Alex Palou and pour myself some Henny.
All this ended up being was just another IndyCar race that didn't count for points in its first year and that nobody could go to because the shit was too damn expensive. They didn't actually want spectators the first year, funnily enough. And then they were just like, no, we're going to bully you into letting people pay to get in the doors. And then they added it to the race, to the calendar, and like, it did give us one of the best skirmishes of the early season.
It did.
But we did also, if you were a member of the viewing public, miss a third of the race because the television truck crashed.
I have never
turned into a little bit of a running theme this year with IndyCar.
If you listened to it on IndyCar radio, you were fine. If you were watching it on television, you're screwed. I think that might have been like the pushy point. And as good as that battle between Lundgaard and Palou was, I don't think it was enough to save the circuit.
No, like this, everything about this race, and give me a couple of minutes on this one. I'm the newest of the three IndyCar fans on this podcast, but it doesn't take a rocket scientist to point out. This race goes against everything that IndyCar stands for when it comes to accessibility, giving back to the fans, and giving the audience a great racing product. Those were the three pillars that IndyCar tried to sit on since I've been a fan 10 years ago. The Thermal Club didn't tick any of those boxes. It was a non-championship round originally on a track that couldn't have everybody in pit road properly, that at one point Rahal Letterman Lanigan Racing threatened to boycott it over how farcical the first non-championship million-dollar challenge race was to begin with. It invited a bunch of likable, depends on who you ask, it brought down likable influencers like Connor Daly and Ash Vandelay to blow smoke up our ass and tell us that this was this magical IndyCar round that was going to look so good for the series on television. And it was a complete and unmitigated disaster. So much so that people that don't normally write about IndyCar was going out of their way talking about how shit that race was. They came back here this year. And yeah, the Pelot-Lungard skirmish was probably the best on-track action IndyCar's had in 2025, but that couldn't salvage a race that was partially lost media, and beyond that, was only really remembered for Devlin DeFrancesco being called a dumb cunt after the fact by Scott McLaughlin for being taken out before the race had even started. It was a boring track, it didn't facilitate passing, it led to accidents because it was dirty and not used enough, it didn't look great on TV, it couldn't give fans a good experience because they could only let 5,000 through the door, and that was at the second attempt. It was being charged ludicrous prices, and they were waving fucking cheese boards and ice creams in our faces, because look at how fancy this place is with its million-dollar garages in the back. This was an insult to me as an IndyCar fan that this was on the calendar for as long as it was, and I am glad it's dead. Don't come back.
It's a perfectly more than adequate private testing venue. Just leave it at that.
Did anybody ask for a race at the Thermal Club as a fan? No. No one was out here like, you know what we need to do? We need to turn the Thermal Club into a Grand Prix event. Fuck no. Hell no! What are we doing here? IndyCar wanted the B2B marketing gimmick, masquerading as an IndyCar race. It was an insult to our intelligence as fans, and I am so glad we're not coming back till at least 2027 at the earliest. I know the Thermal Club is not ruling that possibility out. Hey, in IndyCar, if you're listening to this, and there's an above 0% chance that you are, because I know it's a small world out there when it comes to IndyCar media, don't come back. It's dead. Double up somewhere else if you have to.
Look,
honestly,
look. They were thinking the Nashville Street Race was coming back. It didn't. They were thinking the Grand Prix New Orleans was coming back. It didn't.
There's always Boston. You can't see it, but Cam Buckley is protruding a large middle finger towards his camera as we speak.
I still got to meet Simon Pagenaud at the stand for that race because the race didn't happen. Look, I have nothing to add. Dre's rant there said more than enough.
Let's have a Pagenaud be Scott McLaughlin's new full-time crew chief.
It would be an improvement.
Get out of my head, Buckley. That's exactly what I was about to say.
All you need to just don't crash on the siding lap of the 500. All right, already improved.
Yep, perfect. Let's get out of here. IndyCar will be back next weekend. It's got a week off before it heads for the Mid-Ohio 200. Will we get another Pano Award Alex Palou showdown this time around after last year's tire management save fest, which is a fun time for all involved? Will we get another one of those? We'll have to wait and see. Will it be Dixon Land again? Because you forget he's won around there 5 times, I think. It's a wild one. We'll see. We'll be back next week for a doubleheader of MotoGP at the Assen TT. It's the centennial year of the Assen TT and racing in the region. Going to be a fun one. Kind of a chaotic weekend so far. 9 crashes in free practice. Whew. Wild one. And we got Formula One at the Austrian Grand Prix, because as we all know in Formula One, nothing exciting ever happens when Max Verstappen takes to Austria. No, not at all. That'll be next week. Until then, I've been Dre Harris and Dave Bernard, Joe O'Connell and Cameron Buckley. Until next time, thanks for listening. Sayonara.
Thank y'all.
Still, could be worse.
How could possibly be worse?
I don't know. Tell me, Joseph Newgarden fan.
You could have been one of the people at working at IndyCar that watched that Road America race and then watched that happen in Game 7. Get well soon, Tyrese.
No. Oh.